The New England Patriots might.
It's a whole new era for the Pats, and it all starts with the NFL Draft. This is where we break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Sosi on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to our first edition of the 2020 NFL Draft Preview Show. Bob Sosi coming to you from my home on Boston South Shore and wishing you and yours all the very best in these most difficult times. Hopefully you are safe and sound with your loved ones as I speak. If you are listening while working, whether that means stocking grocery shelves or manning the cashier registers, if you're delivering products, if you're waiting for the next call as a first responder, if you're on our medical front lines, our thoughts, our gratitude forever is with you, and we thank you for joining us today. And regarding my own situation, with that message, I have a bit of a confession to make. I have to admit that I am far less prepared than so many of the outstanding colleagues in the Patriots media who have covered the draft extensively to this point. People like Phil Perry, Evan Lazar, I know I'm going to leave out many others. Mike Reese today with his Quick Thoughts column, the folks at the Herald and on the Athletic, Jeff Howe, and so many others as well. It's been hard to concentrate, I think, for a lot of us this offseason on football. It's been a nice distraction at times. And for me, with two kids at home, trying to keep them engaged on a daily basis at ages 8 and 9, with a wife who works in the healthcare profession, football has at times been truly an afterthought. And it leads me to the story that I wanted to begin with on the news that was announced via Tom Brady's Instagram post that really signaled the reality of a changing of an era here in New England for our favorite football team. In the morning that we learned that Tom, via his social media account, was leaving the Patriots, my wife had just walked out the door to go to work. My thoughts were with her. Our kids were at the kitchen counter. My focus as well was on trying to get them to eat their breakfast without hurting one another in the process and making too much of a mess. And notification came across the phone. And as soon as I touched on it, I really didn't have to read the text, knew what was coming in that instant. And, of course, it was the news that Brady would be playing his football elsewhere. And we since learned, of course, he has signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But for me, the true reality of what's to come for the Patriots, or at least a glimpse into the future, didn't take place until about a week later when ESPN ran the sequence of shows one after the other on Sunday afternoon, recounting the Patriots' glory of the recent past, some of the great games, highlights from Super Bowl 51, etc. Our station here at 98.5, the Sports Hub, started replaying some of the great Patriot comebacks of the recent past, whether it was the Broncos' comeback from 24-0 in 2013 or the 2014 AFC Division game against the Baltimore Ravens and that incredible comeback down 14 twice. Only in watching those ESPN specials, the highlight specials, and watching the outstanding tribute that my friend Jim Murphy did on WBZ with a very lengthy montage of video and audio recounting Tom Brady's career as a Patriot. And, of course, listening to the replays periodically here on the station, did it register that truly we are in for a new reality when it comes to football, even as we try to deal with the difficulty of this reality of an unprecedented time for all of us outside of football in far more important matters, of course. When work does resume, whether that's in September, as we all hope it can for the National Football League, the expectations of the past for the Patriots will be replaced by a lot of intrigue, a lot of questions. And we're going to begin to address some of those today as we look at the state of the Pats and the uniqueness of this offseason and preparing for a very important draft with 12 picks overall, but again, with very few picks among the top 100. After playing on wildcard weekend for the first time in a decade, last year against the Tennessee Titans, the Patriots now are without Tom Brady. The offense diminished in the last couple of seasons, still has deficiencies which haven't been fully or at least adequately addressed through free agency and trade. So we look forward to what's going to take place for the Pats in terms of moves they may make in the very near future or further down the road when it comes to trying to deal with some of those question marks on that side of the ball. At the same time, of course, a strength of the team from 2019 has been diminished on the defensive side with Kyle Van Noy now playing for the Miami Dolphins, or at least signing for the Miami Dolphins. And when you look at other positions in that defense, Danny Shelton coming off a terrific season, Jamie Collins after a resurgent season for him, Daron Harmon in the middle of the defense as a safety, as a player who played so many snaps, played so extensively since coming in as really a relative unknown, a late draft pick in 2013. They do have Devin McCourty back. They have Matthew Slater back, of course. Pillars of leadership in the locker room and two guys who are at the best in what they do in the NFL, who are also coming off what may very well have been their best individual seasons, of course, a year ago in terms of those two, but a lot changing around them. And at the same time, coaching changes for this team. Dante Scarnecchia, now in retirement, somebody's been consulting with the team, as we understand. At least he was going to work before the facility was closed early in the offseason. Joe Judge, the special teams coordinator, whose unit was a strength, now the head coach of the New York Giants, the hiring of Jed Fish on offense, the hiring in the front office of Elliott Wolf, the re-signing of Nick Cassiere in the front office, those certainly positive moves for this team. But once again, this is an offseason of turnover on the coaching staff. Brett Bielema coached the defensive line last year after replacing Brendan Daly, who'd gone on to Kansas City, now with Joe Judge and the New York Giants. So you have the turnover on the roster, the turnover, of course, on the coaching staff, the limitations when it comes to cap space, just over $1 million of cap space for the Pats. I think our friend Miguel Benzon had $1.1 million at last check with around $26 million of dead cap money on the Patriots' books. At the same time, when you look at the draft, there is quantity, but also, when it comes to the draft slotting, the positioning of the Patriots picks, a question about quality. 12 picks, but the first doesn't arrive until number 23, and the next after that is at number 87. Might the Patriots go for those positions of perceived need on offense, like tight end, or even on the offensive line, just as they did 2 years ago when they picked Isaiah Wynn at number 23 as an offensive tackle? Or could it be the defense? If you looked at the team in the immediate aftermath of that loss to the Tennessee Titans last year, you'd say they need somebody who can help stop the run on the edge, maybe a bigger defensive lineman, as the Patriots, of course, skewed last year with a different scheme toward a 34 and got gashed by Derrick Henry and the Titans in that playoff loss. But now, of course, other things have changed on the defense. So you look at the linebacker position, maybe even the safety position as well, with Adrian Phillips, of course, one of the key free agent signings for the Patriots, but still with some questions because of age and on that side of the ball in particular at that position. And then there is the uniqueness of this offseason amid such unsettling and uncertain times due to the COVID-19 pandemic. From the draft preparation to the absence of offseason team conditioning, to the what many believe is going to be the elimination of OTAs and minicamps. Certainly they're in question at this stage at best. To doubts about what may come thereafter. And those are some of the things we're going to explore during today's show with our guest, Jim McBride from the Boston Globe, and my broadcast partner from 98.5 The Sports Hub, Scott Zolak. We'll talk somewhat about prospects that the Patriots might look at, in particular the quarterback position, when we have Zoe on, of course, now with Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer being the two quarterbacks on the depth chart in the wake of the release of Cody Kessler. But we really want to talk today, for the most part, about the process, the uniqueness of this particular draft run-up to the 23rd in Las Vegas, a virtual draft, if you will. We read yesterday from Adam Schefter, heard from Adam Schefter of ESPN, that multiple officials from multiple teams are planning to conduct the draft remotely, virtually from their homes. Team facilities are shut down. And so many questions, of course, still to be resolved when it comes to the draft itself and what we're going to see. It is the only sports event on the docket for the foreseeable future, outside of WWE events, I guess, or Ultimate Fighting and whatnot. But when it comes to major league sports, it's the NFL draft. But it is far from business as usual. We're going to talk about how the Patriots in particular and other teams around the league are looking to tend to that business. Coming up next, when Jim McBride from the Boston Globe joins me on our NFL Draft Preview Show.
The Patriots are on the clock.
With the 23rd pick.
As the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show continues.
Cover your mouth while coughing or sneezing. Please continue physical distancing. It is saving lives. Thank you for helping to keep our community safe. Learn more at massgeneral.org.
This is where the experts break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Soucy on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to our NFL Draft Preview Show. Time now to turn to my friend Jim McBride from the Boston Globe on our Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Jim, how are you and yours?
Everybody's healthy and happy right now, in these crazy times. So luckily.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining me today, and thankfully that's the news, and it's good news for you and your family, and it is crazy to say the least, certainly unique, and it's difficult to talk about football sometimes, but that's what you do, that's what I do, and we have to look ahead to the draft on April 23rd in Las Vegas. Before we get there, though, and talk about the uniqueness of the challenges facing the Patriots in particular, what are the needs confronting the Patriots as you see it going into this year's draft? Obviously, there is no longer the all-time great, the franchise quarterback in the fold, but what else beyond that position might they address?
Yeah, I think defense is going to be, a premium this year, especially with the losses they had at linebacker, Kyle Van Noy, Jamie Collins, even to Landon Roberts. So I think that second level of defense is somewhere that they could choose to go after in the first round. I think the quarterback to take Tom's place is already in house in Jarrett Stidham right now. So I think maybe later on in the draft is where they go after a quarterback for depth purposes. But I would say with defense, a linebacker, and maybe getting a little younger at safety is what I'm looking at.
And when you look at the preparation for this draft, Jim, you have accompanied Bill Belichick as recently as last year, going to pro days, scouting prospects up close and personally. Now, this year, the draft, as we understand it, is going to be conducted virtually, at least as reported yesterday by Adam Schefter. That's the way teams are preparing for it, with facilities shut down. But before you even get to the draft, outside of the combine and the All-Star games, there is an absence of the usual steps in the process. There's been FaceTime calls between coaches and scouts and players, but not that personal connection, just like for the rest of us, right, with social distancing. So when you think back to your experience, what are Belichick and his colleagues around the league, what are they now missing? What isn't going to be there to invest in the draft preparation this year?
I think it's that personal interaction, being on the field with a kid when he's going to the drills, having the time to pull a kid aside and ask him a few questions, and seeing his reaction, not just on the phone or in his voice, but seeing, his body language. I remember being at the pro days last year in Alabama and Georgia and asking Coach Belichick about what he really liked from those pro days. He mentioned that the combine's great because there's so many guys there and you can look at so many guys, but he really enjoyed being on the field as a kid, did his 40 and ran by him to kind of, get a feel for that and see how a kid reacts to adversity when, when there's a throwing drill and he might drop a pass. Is he slumped his shoulders? Does he, jump right back in line and do it again? And then it's that time where he just maybe has 35, 40 seconds to talk to a kid about a certain play that he might have seen on tape or, things like that. So it's that one-on-one personal interview that he has with a kid. And I think that goes for a lot of the scouts and certainly a lot of the scouts in the Patriots organization.
Also, it really is a disadvantage for kids who are coming out of programs not like Alabama. Those like, for example, a Keon Crossan, who was picked out of a small school, Western Carolina. I believe he had his pro day at Wake Forest, or others who've caught the attention of the Patriots in the past, who came from smaller schools but had their pro days give them the opportunity to be exposed to the NFL scouts and sometimes even on a different campus. And that makes it interesting, especially for the Patriots with this draft. And I don't want to get too complex with it, but they have a lot of picks, but most of them, or many of them, are in the late rounds, including, I believe, what, six in the final two rounds?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, it's like you said, a kid's from a smaller school that might not have, you know, have an agent yet to who can, you know, advocate for this guy, who can set up a, you know, kind of a mini pro day with just him in a gym somewhere, and they can send that, he can tweet that out, and more people will see it. But, you know, a kid from a small school might be able to do that, but if he tweets it out, you know, not as many people are going to see it because he probably doesn't have as many followers. So that really... that really kind of handicaps not only the scout, but it handicaps the kid as well. So, you know, this has really been such a different time for every team, really.
How do you think it's going to affect the thoughts of the Pats in particular when it comes to the lack of off-season conditioning right now for the team in general? But then beyond that, really all the questions, the doubts that many have when it comes to OTAs and minicamp, that's the time to start to, of course, get these young players acclimated to the NFL, just to know what it's going to be like going from meeting room A to meeting room B to the practice field, how to properly put your pads on, let alone, you know, diving into the playbook.
Yeah, I would say that the in preparation-wise, the Patriots are probably coming up with different plans daily as events warrant. You know, will they have OTAs? Probably not. Will there be a mandatory minicamp? Probably not. So it's probably every day they're probably formulating a plan. Okay, this has been eliminated. Now we have to, you know, accelerate it by, you know, doing A, B, and C. And then the next week something else gets eliminated. I think they're going back to work on another preparation plan. So I think that because this program has been so established by Coach Belichick in 20-plus years, that they'll be able to adjust to these these new life realities better than a team that, you know, maybe has a new coach or a coach that's only been in place for one or two seasons. So I think that, you know, the Patriots will have an advantage there because their program is established. But when it comes to the rookies and the new signees, that's where it's going to be, you know, really telling. How quick can these guys ingratiate themselves into a program that they have no experience in? And I think that, you know, the teams with veteran leadership and veteran rosters and a solid coaching staff in place are going to have the advantage over, you know, other teams.
Jim, what about the re-signing of Nick Cassero, the new contract for him, and also the fact that Monty Ossenford is still with the Patriots? When we talk about having that experience, the continuity, at least in the front office with Bill Belichick, approaching this draft, and I want to combine it with the absence of pro days, because one of the things that the Patriots seemingly do more than anybody else is get a head start on the next year's draft class. So often when we hear from Nick Cassero or others from the Patriots just before this year's draft, they're talking about the work that they've already been doing on next year's class. So is that an advantage for this team when you look at the way they approach scouting juniors? And did you see that last year with Bill at all? I know the pro days are for the seniors, but did you, or the kids who at least are coming out in the draft, did you get a sense that he was also looking at or talking to the coaches he was visiting about the younger players on their roster who would be coming out in ensuing seasons?
Yeah, I assume that's what a lot of those conversations are on the field. Like, you know, he spoke with Nick Saban for a while, and, you know, they have a close relationship. You know, he didn't discuss any underclassmen with me. I don't think they're allowed to really discuss that, but I'm sure the, you know, those discussions happen. And, you know, when you're watching film, I remember watching the film right before the Alabama Pro Day with Coach Belichick, and you can't help but notice some of the guys on that tape, even if you're scouting, you know, a guy that's coming out. There's underclassmen that catch your eye. And I think that's when the process begins for him, because he has such an encyclopedic memory and remembers all these guys. So I think that helps. And in training his coaching staff and his scouting staff, I'm sure that's one thing he tells them to look for. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I do remember, you know, Nick always says when we talk to him, you know, look, the evaluation process to this guy goes back two or three years, not just a year. And I'm sure that's when it starts, when they're, you know, they're scouting draft eligible guys and another guy catches their eye that, you know, that makes a play. So, yeah, I think absolutely the evaluation process goes back more than one season for this staff, absolutely.
Bill was in Tuscaloosa when you were with him last year. Earlier this offseason, before, of course, we fell into the throes of the COVID-19 pandemic and the effects of social distancing, Bill Belichick was in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl, and he was there for the first time in a long time, able to watch the players practice, able to watch some of the prospects that no doubt had caught the Patriots' eyes beforehand. The Pats have had a trend of taking players from the All-Star games in recent drafts. How valuable do you think that experience was?
I think it's huge. You know, it's obviously not somewhere he wanted to be, because he would have rather been preparing for the Super Bowl. But I think it's an invaluable week for them. I remember being at the Senior Bowl after the Patriots lost the AFC Championship game to the Broncos a few years back. It was my first year on the beat, and I remember, you know, Coach Belichick was there with his staff, and you know, you could see how much they were getting out of it. I mean, notes were being taken, talks were being had, and I'm sure they were checking in with the coaching staff. I think the Dallas Cowboys was one of the staffs that year, and you know, I saw Coach Belichick talking to some of the members of the Cowboys staff, just getting a read on guys. I think it's beneficial. They have guys down there every year, whether they're reaching the Super Bowl or not. But I think to have, you know, your top assistants and the head coach there, it's a silver lining for a team that you know, had Super Bowl aspirations but weren't able to get there.
Earlier today, your friend and colleague Mike Reese from ESPN mentioned the quarterback at Florida International, and we know the Patriots have had a history of taking players from smaller programs, as I documented, Keon Cross and others like Jimmy Garoppolo, of course, from the FCS, a second-round pick at quarterback. And he really caught people's eye back in 2014 because of his performance in the All-Star games. And before it was the Senior Bowl, he had shined in the East-West game as well. And thinking back to some of the scenes surrounding that event this offseason, there was a video, I think, Scott Pioli put on Twitter, and it was the morning of one of the practice days leading up to the East-West Shrine game, and there was almost a vacant room except for a handful of players, and it seemed one team represented by scouts on hand interviewing them, and that was the Patriots their preparation, again, getting at it earlier than others, at least on that particular day, as captured in that particular video. The Pats, the business, the approach that they have in a situation like this, is that, do you think, again, some sort of an, I know other teams have that, they try to cultivate that kind of approach, but how does that prepare the Patriots for these circumstances as well, on top of everything else you've discussed?
You know, I think that Coach Belichick has such a network of coaches and relationships across the league that I think, you know, and across college football, obviously, I think they're the ones that, you know, probably tip him off to a guy that they think might fit his style. And I think that's why, you know, you see so many guys from the SEC get drafted by the Patriots, because he has such deep roots in SEC. So I think he probably sends his staff to guys when he gets those tips, you know, and the scouting staff, again, that's going to really hurt this year with not being able to be on the road. But I think that those connections really help, because guys know what coach is looking for. They know the kind of player that fits in a Patriot system. You know, I'm thinking, you know, about, you know, Iowa and the connections that he has at Iowa and the players that have come from there into the Patriot system. So I think it's that network that really helps. I mentioned before the fact that the Patriots program has been in place for so long, and it's so consistent that, you know, guys can get a read on who's going to fit that system. And if they feel like they have a, you know, kind of a hidden gem or a diamond in the rough, they're going to reach out to Coach Belichick, and, you know, he's going to do his due diligence, whether it's checking it out for himself. You know, we saw him at Middle Tennessee State right before the combine, or sending one of his scouts. So I think it's important for the staff to leave no stone unturned. And I think that, you know, the success they've had in late rounds and undrafted guys really shines because of the work that they do and the work of Nick Caserio and Monty Austin Ford and their staffs.
Jimmy, look at the staff turnover for the Patriots. That's going to be a challenge. We've talked about player turnover a little bit, of course, significantly at quarterback, and as you mentioned, on defense as well. Then there are the other variables, the strength of schedule. The Patriots have the most difficult schedule at this point, looking ahead to the 2020 slate. First place schedule for the AFC, then they've got the NFC West, maybe the best division in football, and the AFC West, which might be the second best division in football. Six of the 13 opponents this year were in the playoffs last season. Then you combine that with the reality, of course, of what we're talking about with the lack of OTAs and minicamps, in all likelihood, at least a truncated offseason of preparation for players. Does that lead you to believe that the Patriots are more apt this year to go with, you know, players from bigger programs, players who may have come closer to their than others that get a chance in the past? And
well, I would add to that that the scheduling difficulties are going to be the travel this year too. There's three West Coast trips. There's trips to you know, Kansas City and Houston. So it's going to be a daunting task. And I think that you know, that's probably a good point. I think that guys that are coming from programs that are established, high quality programs, top competition, those guys are going to be able to adjust probably more to the Patriots way or to any NFL system really than any of the smaller school guys. So I think you may see a run on big school guys earlier than maybe you would, and less chances taken against the late round picks or smaller school guys. Maybe those guys fall to undrafted free agency, and you know, maybe some of them have to take a kind of a redshirt year on the practice squad before they can have a real impact with this team.
You said earlier that you think this is a situation where Jarrett Stidham is the guy in house. I'll ask you for your thoughts on quarterback. Cody Kessler is no longer on the roster. Do they bring in someone like a Jalen Hurts, a Jake Fromm, maybe another quarterback in a mid to late round situation, or 23? Do they try to maneuver for one of those higher graded quarterbacks coming out?
Yeah, I got lucky this year at the draft, and at the combine, and I was able to watch the quarterbacks work out, the first session of quarterbacks. And someone who really caught my eye was Jalen Hurts. I know there'd been speculation that teams were going to ask him to work out at running back, but you know, after watching this kid run the drills, I think he's a quarterback at this level. Now, I don't think he's going to be in the first round, but I could see him as a really nice pick for the Patriots in the third round. I thought he threw really nice tight spirals. I thought he led receivers well. He looked completely natural in the position. He had nice footwork. So, you know, probably not a first-round guy, but certainly someone who is used to the big stage, you know, played at Alabama, played at Oklahoma, played in a lot of big games in his career. He's going to know or he's going to be taught, you know, he's been taught what to expect at this level. So I think he's a really nice fit. Also, Jake Fromm that you mentioned, he was another guy that was very impressive during those sessions. And Jacob Eason, another guy that I thought really threw the ball well, had a great combine. I think any of those three guys could probably come in and compete for the starting job. Maybe not compete for the starting job, but be a guy that could eventually take over this program.
Well, Jim, you were the first pick on the show today. I really appreciate your time. Again, continued best wishes to you and your family, and I hope we can see one another sooner rather than later.
That would be great, and I hope your next guest, Scott Zolak, gets his power back. I saw this morning that he lost his power this morning, so that's no fun.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not any time, but especially in this time. Jim, thanks so much.
Thanks, Bob.
Jim McBride with us. The aforementioned Scott Zolak is next on the NFL Draft Preview Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Patriots are on the clock
with the 23rd pick.
As the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show continues, it's a whole new era for the Pats, and it all starts with the NFL Draft. This is where we break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Sosi on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And welcome back to our NFL Draft Preview Show, first edition here on 98.5 The Sports Hub in the spring of 2020. My thanks to Jim McBride, our first guest, and thanks to you as well for bearing with us. I understand we had some technical difficulties in the first interview, at least at the beginning, and we hopefully have rectified those thanks to our chief engineer, Dennis Knutson, who I look forward to seeing this fall, along with my broadcast partner, Scott Zolak, our producer, Mark Capello, and the rest of the gang in the booth at Gillette Stadium and, of course, elsewhere in the NFL. And it's good to talk to Scott Zolak now. He's on the line. Scott from Wrentham has called in. The power has been restored. Zo, I hope you guys are doing well.
It has, and maybe this thing could go a little more, I don't want to say downhill as the Jim McBride interview, but if this phone dies, Tracy has to call me back on my cell, so you can hear me, right?
I can hear you great.
Great, good, because I only got one bar on this phone. But, yeah, kick you in the nuts a little more. You wake up on a Sunday morning, no power, given the state of everything, but, hey, it could be a lot worse for a lot of people out there. And just sitting here trying to decide who I'm going to get takeout from today to help all the local restaurants out, the smaller eateries around here, especially in the town of Wrentham, that have stayed open and done the best they could to help keep people fed. And we want to keep them up and running, and we don't want them to go out of business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you've been pretty active on social media, to say the least, in trying to spread that word as well. And, you know, for so many people who are going through these unprecedented times and unprecedented challenges, including small businesses and
yeah,
those now out of work, friends of ours, colleagues of ours, so many in the same situation. Football sports have been a distraction. And the one thing that returns us to normalcy often after tragic events, as was the case in 9/11, is at least the sound and sight of a sporting event. I know that was the case for me back in September of 2011 when baseball resumed play after the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. When you look at this situation right now, the NFL draft is it on the sports calendar for the most part, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I really think they're going to go ahead and do this. And, it's like us. And, you're doing the show from home today. I've been doing the show with Beetle from home for the last 2 weeks. So you adjust, you make adjustments accordingly. And let me see, make sure this isn't you guys calling. Nope. Okay. You adjust accordingly. And if you could function and do your job, like we're doing our job, you're doing your draft show, I'm doing my radio show, if you complete that task and you could do it in a respectable, healthy way and still get your business done, and I love this part of it, because I think sometimes coaches get fooled by interviews, and, a kid can be a used car salesman and get in there and sell himself, like, oh, we got to draft this kid. This gets it back to the old days where you actually got to watch football tape and make decisions based on, can a kid play the game or not? And I kind of like this type of draft where, okay, we got to go with our gut instincts. And the teams that prepare the most, and I go back to the Senior Bowl when Scott Pioli filmed a video of the interview room prior to breakfast. It was about 6:30 in the morning, Senior Bowl week. Yep. And there were six separate interviews taking place with individuals. And he said, no shock here, all Patriots interviews. So the teams that did the most homework to start towards the end of the season, once the season ended, and, hey, granted, we've had the experience of not having our season ended for a while, extended into January and February if you're lucky enough. But you get popped in the first round, you get ahead of the game, and you rely on your scouts and all the work and hard work Marty Austin Fort and Nick Casario put in, over the last couple months. And you go there and you pick them, and you do it, whether it's via Skype, the internet, whatever it is, whether these coaches are going to be at home. I think that may be the plan. I guess they won't be at the facility, which is unusual to me, that these picks will be being made from home. I think it's going to be an interesting draft. It makes it more interesting.
When you look at the drafts, though, the Pats, of course, have areas of pretty pronounced and obvious need. We talk about tight end often.
Yeah.
The offensive line on the defensive side, especially at linebacker. Do you think, though, that with the circumstances being what they are and the picks residing where they do, the first pick is at 23, the next is at 87,
correct,
are the Patriots really drafting for this year in 2020?
It's a great question, because I've heard some people analyze this and look at it based on our times and our uncertainty. Can they punt on this draft and look forward to the next draft to where can you take one of those picks, move them to next year to where you really can load up when – in essence, you're going to have, I think Mike Reese had this stat of $100 million in salary cap space. I didn't believe that. I didn't believe that for 1 second. Then you go and you look at it, like, holy cow, we just haven't had that, you know, the luxury of having any cap space. You know, they pretty much push it to the cap every year. I don't think they're reaching for a quarterback. I know people are, you know, we've talked about Tua on our show. I'm not sure if he can even play at the next level. I say that if you're going to reach and draft a guy number three. Now, if you could get Tua in the third round, second round, I would say, yeah, take the kid. But I watch a lot of that combine. I put a lot of stock into seeing how kids look in rhythm, throwing the football. I'm not sold on Justin Herbert. I think he's a robot. I thought the two best kids that threw at the combine were Jalen Hurts and Jake Fromm. And if you could get one of those guys in, like, the third, fourth round, like where you picked Stidham last year, yeah, you take him and you bolster it. You got Hoyer, who's basically a coach, who's going to help. And I just say you roll with Stidham at this point. I don't want them reaching for a quarterback. It's not what they do. And you brought up the biggest need, tight end. How many frustrating games did we call last year because you basically got nothing from the tight end position? And I think that carried over to the frustration of the quarterback and the offensive coordinator.
What about the offensive line, too, on top of that? You know, Marcus Cannon is a right tackle who's been a good player for them once he's moved into the starting right. lineup. But, you know, last year there were times when he struggled. Health has been an annual issue. And then, of course, there's the salary implications for a player yeah. like that. Joe Tooney, of course, the franchise tag at guard, the highest paid player on the team, one of the two highest cap hits on the team this year. They get David Andrews back at center. But how do they address the offensive line, whether that's drafting people, bringing people in, but also maybe maneuvering and letting people go?
Yeah, that's going to be the big thing. And you don't have Dante Scarnecchia. Now I know Dante's still around. He was with him at the combine. He's, you know, they're still confiding in him and, you know, trusting his expertise. That's going to be something to watch is, you know, we start to call games and see how they adjust from series to series. I think you're strong in the middle. You got two really good guards. You get that center back. And I think big problems last year, and I love Teddy Karras and how he played. You know, and he's pretty versatile, and he's not here anymore. But getting Andrews back, I think, means a lot. But depending on is the quarterback able to make the calls like our other quarterback was over the last 20 years and adjust protection, and he had really good centers over his career, how far can you advance things, you know, with those three guys in the middle? I think they need to draft a tackle. You know, they've already drafted Isaiah Wynn. They've, you know, that's a first-round pick. I can't see them, you know, going at 23 and taking a tackle that high. I think they're going defense. I think you get impact players on defense, and based on the way, you know, that they locked up the McCourty twins and having Stephon Gilmore as a lockdown corner, you lose Kyle Van Noy. Hightower's getting up there in age. You lose Landon Roberts. I think they're going middle linebacker. I'd get the most athletic guy that they could get at 23, and maybe if a guy's there at 20, trade up to get him there.
So when you look at other positions like wide receiver, they took a first-round pick last year, N'Keal Harry. It was kind of a redshirt year for him because of the injury situation. So maybe they don't go high for him, and maybe they go later for a wide receiver. And there's one in particular I wanted to ask you about because he's the son of one of your former teammates, Sean Jefferson's kid. Tell me about him as a player, what he was like for you, and now he's a coach in the NFL, and he's got a son who's coming out in this year's draft and might be a kind of a mid-round pick for the Patriots to certainly consider.
Yeah, you know, I played with Sean. Sean's got a great motor, and that's the one thing. His work ethic was phenomenal, especially in practice. I looked at him on offense as sort of our pseudo-captain. You know, out of fear, I think we voted Bruce Armstrong in as captain, because if you didn't vote Bruce in, you're going to have some issues. But Sean really, I think, helped lead our offense and led our work ethic from a skill set group where it's quarterbacks, receivers, tight ends, and he was always at the forefront. I think he was good for Terry, you know, especially early in Terry's career, taught him how to work, and he eventually became a pretty darn good kid down in Dallas. If his son is anything like his dad from that, it's just, and I know Sean, and Sean's probably stayed on him and taught him everything he knows, and Sean had a pretty good head for the game as far as where to cut routes short, where to take them deep. You know, the one touchdown I threw to him against San Francisco, he changed the play in the huddle because he was getting sick of running curl routes. He said he was going to set up a guy and run. I said, you better catch it, and I threw it as far as I could. And I thought I overthrew him about 10 yards. He had that speed and work ethic, and he went and got it. And Randy Moss's kid's another one too. Like, what do you take from your dad? What do you take from your father? And you know, you've given, you know, the genes that God has given you, because you know the way these kids are bred and who they come from. it's just, you know, if he's even there somewhere around 3 or 4, you take a peek at him. And but, you know, he's got the foot issue. See, there's some guys with some interesting injuries. A lot of big names. They're going to be at the top of this draft that some teams are going to have to take risks on. Tua is one of them. And I know he's been moving around well, and you've seen the videos getting outside the pocket and the hip. But, you know, played a lot. Just certain guys I wouldn't touch in this draft if there's an injury question, and I think he's one of them.
And we're referring to Thaddeus Moss from LSU and Van Jefferson out of Florida at the tight end wide receiver positions, which gets me to the question of the wide receiver position in general and tight end for that matter in the Patriots passing attack. Now that Tom is gone.
Real quick here, too, to touch on the wide receivers. I forget the name. The big kid on the outside from Notre Dame, about 6'4", 6'5". He exploded at the combine, tested out great. I think he ran like a 4.39 or 4.4. Like, that's somebody I would take a peek at, too. You know, and you know, Notre Dame's ability to mass produce tight ends, you know, they're able to pump them out. But you even go back to earlier years when it was Gronkowski and Hernandez, even earlier than that, Daniel Graham, Ben Watson. You know, we got Watson back here at the end of his career. It was Ridley and Vereen. Patriots will rebuild a single position throughout one draft, and this could be the year where they really reset a tight end. So sorry to interrupt you there, but go ahead.
No, Chase Claypool. 6'4", 238. Yeah, absolutely. But it gets to the question about that position and how the Patriots use it in an offense now that Jarrett Stidham is the quarterback versus Tom Brady. How's it going to change for Josh McDaniels? How's it going to change for the players who are coming in to the Patriots offense, getting acclimated to the NFL and getting up to speed?
See, I know there's talk this week of getting rid of Edelman, right, trading him. You're not trading the guy that moves the sticks. He's the guy that makes the offense go. I go back to what Charlie Weiss told us at the Super Bowl. This whole offense and the way it is designed and called is predicated off the slot position and the tight end and the way they combo each other. Now, if you find that tight end, you know you've got Mohamed Sanu, and I think Sanu could be a bubble guy here. Sanu, if he doesn't get healthy and show that he could produce the way, you know, we saw him down in was that Super Bowl 51? I lose track of him down in Houston. He could be a veteran bubble guy, but you got Harry on the outside. Now, do you really want to go draft another 6'4", 6'3", 6'5" kid on the outside that really can't get off the jam because he's a big kid? They may need a speed guy on the outside. I think that's why, you know, they liked Dorsett, kept him around a lot to sort of complement everything else they had. And it worked when you had Gronkowski, you know, but forcing that guy to be a number one or number two on the outside when you don't have Gronk, you know, that's a whole different issue. But they got to figure out what Stidham does well. And I go back to August calling the games for him when you and I flipped to the TV side. I was impressed by the amount of information that they threw at him. You know, it was about as exotic and multiple a set in the preseason. And even going back to Jimmy Garoppolo's first year here, it was pretty base. But this was motion. This was empty. They put him in a gun. And I think the verticals, you know, the in-route stuff over the middle and deeper, pretty good feel for it. I think the ball comes out nicely out of his hand. He throws a tight ball. And I know a lot of people talk about athleticism and legs. You really don't want your quarterback running at this level. But I think people misconstrue that where, okay, maybe he could take off on a 3rd and 4. No, I think it's more about sliding in the pocket, being a little more athletic behind center, maybe put him under center a little bit more, which could threaten a running game. And you got to get the running game going. You know, it's interesting the way they've acquired fullbacks here. And do you get Devlin back, and what's his health point? Because I think Sony's a different back if he has a fullback and a blocking tight end. That was a big problem with the running game last year. How much frustrated were we on 3rd and 1, 4th and 1? And it just seems to be a continuous problem for this team, not able to convert on those type of downs. They got a lot of issues on offense, Bob, is really what we're sort of getting to here.
Yeah, and of course, we're talking about a spring of uncertainty. We know the draft, the NFL is going to go ahead with the draft on the 23rd through the 25th. But no OTAs in all likelihood, or mini camps perhaps. And then there are the questions about the season itself. Now, yesterday, the president had a conference call with the major sports leagues commissioners. Then in his briefing at the White House, said that he thinks that the leagues should come back if they can. According to ESPN, on his conference call, said he hopes to have fans back in stadiums and arenas by August and September, though he said afterward he's not committing to it.
Right.
The California governor, Gavin Newsom, cautioned that he's not anticipating that happening in his state based on where they are today and what they have seen, for example, in Asia.
Sure.
There's also the league's chief medical officer, Scott Stills, who was quoted this week with some cautionary words. So when you look at the situation as it is it relative to 2011 with the lockout, the way teams have to prepare themselves and individual players have to prepare themselves with, you know, a truncated offseason and the uncertainty about when the regular season is going to start?
I think it's a head scratcher right now for a lot of teams, because I think, you know, you look at a lot of stupidity out there and some of the coaches you go up against. And I think this is where, you know, a team like the Patriots have an advantage during a time like this, to where they're so mentally prepared that this is why you secure and keep some of your veterans around. And here's what I question, you know, what's the work ethic at home? Because you really can't assemble. You see Dallas putting out a picture of six guys working out and they got their arms around each other last week. There's still some stupidity within this league. But I think we need to have some goals. I think we need to set some sight lines to where you give people some hope, because we do live in a great country where I think eventually we're going to get past this. But we don't know what the exact date is. You can't date a virus. I know you're much more informed based on your ability to talk to people at home as far as what this curve can be. But if we continue to do what we're told to do and respect this thing and eventually get back to it, we've got to get back to normal business here at some point, or else people are financially going to get buried. And, you know, as we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, people look to sports. And I think the NFL is lucky from the standpoint that, you know, their season doesn't start until September. You know, hockey is not fortunate enough. Baseball, you know, basketball. You're talking about putting teams on cruise ships and playing. No, you don't want that. You know, the athlete lives for the juice of the arena or the stadium. You need to play in front of people. Because I think you feel like you're going through the motions if it's sort of a practice environment or a controlled environment. This is all tough, and I think we're in no man's land here, because this is, you know, this is a virus that we're learning as we go. But you've got to think, with our brilliant medical people that we have around us, that at some point, you know, we've got to get that vaccine. We've got to, you know, to the testing that you know, the leagues and the NFL is talking about. We need to make sure everybody's tested and clear before we even get back to even operating or opening our facilities again. But the NFL is lucky, because I think that's the first team or the first sports organization and league that is going to have the ability to open full steam if we get to that point here this summer, in midsummer.
And let me correct myself, because I do need my notes, and I mentioned a name that wasn't even close. It's Dr. Alan Sills, the chief medical officer of the
NFL. At least you didn't say Steven Stills from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Right. Shaughnessy would be all over that one. There's so many doctors you hear now, you just can't keep up with them. You know, Fauci's a big one. At least we know him, because he's pretty much on every station. So,
yeah,
plus you've got that nice size behind the podium, hiding there with his little head sticking up right over it. But
hey, nothing wrong with short Italians. Although he's not brighter than this one, that's for sure.
Hey, don't cut yourself short.
Hey, listen, you guys have been doing a great job during the week. Mark Bertrand and Hardy alongside. And the rest of our staff at 98.5 The Sports Hub and in the Beasley Group as well. Continued good work. Hopefully we can talk about football on the field sooner rather than later. So thanks for chiming in this morning.
Bob, I can't wait to enter that tent out there in camp, and you can smell that fresh-cut grass, the humidity, the water cooler, and see the miserable Dan Rhodes sitting there. That's when I know our season's ready to go. But I miss you. Can't wait to do that. And everybody take care of yourself out there. Let's be smart about this, and let's put this behind us at some point, get back to some normalcy, and let's play sports again. That's what we do.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Take care.
All right, pal. I miss you. I'll see you.
Scott Zolak with us. Back with our final thoughts after this on the NFL Draft Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Patriots are on the clock.
With the 23rd pick.
As the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show continues.
And we close things out on this NFL Draft Preview Show with a non-draft thought. Something related to far more important matters, of course. Last week, we learned that Tom Brady's name reportedly came up in a conference call between the president and governors trying to secure medical supplies for their states. Well, here in the Commonwealth, our Governor Charlie Baker called upon Tom Brady's former team, well, specifically the Crafts, contacting Jonathan Kraft, and of course, as we now know how the story unfolded, the Kraft family delivered in a time of dire need with their incredible effort to transfer 1.2 million N95 masks from China to the Commonwealth, in addition to Rhode Island and even New York City. What a scene, what a sight, when that plane touched down at Logan, and even more so when the Patriots truck rolled in to New York City. And who could have ever envisioned a scenario in which a back page of a New York tabloid would be thanking the Pats? Unfortunate as it is that it had to come to this. But what an effort by the Patriots, with 500,000 more masks to be transferred as well from China in the days ahead, thanks to the effort of the Crafts and the governor. And when I think about the Patriots having called their games for the last 7 years, including three championships, so many moments that are priceless, so many moments that I am proud of and know that I'm privileged to be associated with in some very, very, very small way. But never prouder, as I said on Twitter this past week, than the present, the way this organization has stepped into this time of need, as it often has done, and delivered. As my friend and friend from the Globe, Chris Gasper, wrote, there's no place in America that more fervently supports its professional sports teams than Massachusetts. Now it turns out there's no better professional sports team in supporting its community than the Patriots. The Patriots and the Crafts aren't socially distancing themselves from their civic responsibility. And it's not just delivering those masks. It's preparing meals en masse, handing out free meals to hundreds of thousands. It's conducting blood drives, as the Patriots will do at Gillette Stadium in the very near future, in a time of great need in this COVID-19 pandemic, with blood supplies in shortage in many of our medical facilities. So again, the Crafts came through, and as I said, no prouder than the present to be associated with the organization, and to know that we have here in New England a team that has delivered so many unforgettable memories on the field, but has given us a far greater gift off it. And now, as I try to emotionally say goodbye, I wish you and yours all the very best. Of course, stay safe, everybody. And again, special thanks to everyone who's coming through as well in your own way, from delivery people to those in the grocery stores, to those who are out responding to the calls as first responders, and of course, to our medical workers, the warriors on the front lines of this crisis. We look forward to a draft show next week when we can talk about football and prospects in particular. And now we look forward to listening to Christian Arcan here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. So long for now.